Hello and welcome to the first MLB roundtable, MLB best ball roundtable here at Spike Week, a part of the MLB best ball almanac for 2024. I am, of course, host Eric Beinfort, joined by B. Kurt, Bernie, whatever we call him, a bunch of different things. B. Kurt, my co-host here at Spike Week. If you're unfamiliar, if you have maybe not dabbled into our NFL best ball almanac, we're going to try to do one of these roundtables about every week leading up to the season as much as we can, to get you all set with like some more nuanced conversation around our MLB best ball drafts. Within the almanac, which is 100% free, you have rankings, you have kind of our core players and picks that we like, you have some different strategy pieces, and we're going to continue to populate that almanac with various content. But one of those forms of content here is our roundtable, accompanied often by an expert survey that we'll do about weekly as well, where you can really kind of dig into our brains and some things that we're thinking about. But we wanted to bring you one of these roundtables to kick off. We're 3 weeks away from the baseball season. Yeah. It is coming. It is coming fast. But to dive into some things that we're really thinking about in terms of our MLB best ball drafts, and just to dive in right away, I wanted to ask Bernie, like, in the first episode of this, as we're really diving in, I'm 40 dingers deep on Underdog, drafted a handful on Drafters, and I don't know, maybe 20 DraftKings MLB best ball drafts. I've started to feel some certain like trends, some things, and of course I've written about some of those as well within the almanac. But is there anything specifically as you've started to draft, like you're just like, man, I went into that draft, or I went into this draft cycle, and I'm like, that's the thing, you know what I mean? That when I go into every draft, I'm kind of thinking about that ahead of time.
So I come from this weird world when it comes to these MLB best ball drafts, because I don't have a huge MLB knowledge. I watched it a ton as a kid. I had baseball cards. I played all the games, but then there was this like 10 to 15 year gap where I didn't super follow it. So I dabbled in my toes in the MLB last year, and I'm getting way deeper into it, researching, looking at Fangraphs, different things this year. So I'm coming to it from kind of without a perspective. So what I'm looking for in these drafts is certain archetypes of players and different best ball strategies, where you might have somebody that's like, oh man, I'm a Giants guy, or I'm a Mets guy, and I'm going to dabble these people and, oh, they have all this historical background of why they like this player. I can't tell these players apart. So what I can rely on is kind of like their individual profiles, their stacking partners. It's really removing all player attachment from my process. No player takes, really, and just learning about these people, learning about the situations, and drafting based on that.
I love that, actually. I think that that's a big edge. Now, I think if you had your druthers, you would also know really, you know, intimately all the different players in the player pool and all that kind of stuff. But I think that's the least important part. And I think a lot of people may disagree or be coming into this and be like, oh, that's interesting. That's not how I kind of view the game. But I think baseball, I think these non-NFL sports are particularly advantageous for people who are taking best ball seriously. And I think baseball is maybe one of the best ones, where a lot of the people are coming from like a roto league background or whatever. And so the scoring naturally is way like so different from like a roto format. Right there, the game is different from a scoring. Now we're taking into account not just the scoring, but the format of I'm in this 50,000 person tournament. I got to make it out of my league and then make it through the playoffs at the end of the year that we are very accustomed to from having played NFL, you know, and maybe NBA. If you've played that, we've played best ball a lot already. So we're accustomed to this format. And so even though you may not know that,
I learned who Jorge Soler was the other day.
Right. You may not know Jorge Soler like intimately about the exact kind of archetype of player that he is, but anybody can figure that out, dude. Fangraphs.com is free for everybody. Yeah. We can all go look at it. It's completely free. StatCast data is free for everybody. Everything is free from a data perspective. You can find out about these players. But the edge, I think, is really, really, really strong in baseball in terms of identifying two main things. Identifying the players who fit this game better, right? There are absolutely players who fit this game really, really well because of the inherent nature of best ball and because of the scoring and because of the playoff format. That are probably awful picks from a roto or like your home baseball league. They might be awful picks. So one of our core picks that I put out there is Nolan Gorman from the Cardinals. Yeah. People will say it's a little bit of bias, whatever, but also I would draft the shit out of Nolan Gorman if he was on the fucking Tigers. It doesn't matter to me. But I'm not sure that he's like a smash roto league pick. I don't really, but in a point scoring, right? He is not a good pick, but the Joey Gallos of the world who hit 180, but hit a bunch of home runs and get on base, like those guys have a lot of value in this format. And then particularly, I think we have a big edge in assessing the market really well. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think we've done here that I want to touch on, where I'm like super passionate about what we would call a zero pitcher strategy. Yeah. I think the market, given the scoring, especially on underdog, and especially the fact that if you're just digging into this, on underdog in your starting lineup every single week, you will fill three pitcher spots, right? So you draft 20 players. Your starting lineup has three pitchers. It has three infielders, three outfielders, and a flex hitter, meaning you're starting 10 players. Seven of them are hitters.
Yeah.
And the scoring is it also with the pitchers. You can read that in the almanac is not great for the elite pitchers to distance themselves. And you're just naturally starting more hitters. They score more points. Everything leads itself into really targeting the superstar hitters, I think. And that's just something that, like, I know a lot of the folks in our Discord, they may listen to this and they're like, yeah, dummy, I'm doing this already. But like, you guys are good at this. You guys are the sharp drafters. That's not everybody. There's a lot of people doing this, like what I would equate to like 5 years ago NFL best ball,
yeah,
where the whole first round was running backs. And like, that's kind of where we are in MLB.
I was going to say 3 years ago NFL best ball, but exactly. People aren't, from me just being an outside observer coming in, they aren't leaning into best ball strategies here. They're like, oh, I'm going to get this guy, I'm going to get that guy. And then they're like, two at this position, two at this position, two at this position. You're not seeing that kind of draft capital allocation that we think about. We're like early and not often, or like those types of different strategies, zero pitcher or heavy outfielder. You're not seeing a whole lot of teams deploy these strategies at all.
I see most drafts that I go into and a zero pitcher that you and I would deploy like with total comfort, like first pitcher can be like pick 90, pick 100, pick whatever. Oh,
buddy, I've gone farther than that.
100%. I got teams where like my last eight picks are pitchers.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And it's like, I'm just loaded up on all the superstar hitters. There's nuance to that, right? I really like Nolan Gorman, who goes at pick 185. I really like Will Benson, who goes at pick like 220 or whatever. So those guys factor into my strategy, right? It's not completely just last eight picks of pitchers. But I also think the market is bad at pricing pitchers. That's the other thing. It's like, there's pitchers that go late that are like, I think you said this, where I do follow baseball pretty closely. I like to follow the prospects and all that kind of stuff. DL Hall, which is a cool name, by the way. I wish my DL is a much cooler first name than Eric. DL Hall is like I think we have him ranked at like in the 160s or something like that. And he like goes undrafted in most drafts.
There's like, some pushback on him from the market is like, is he even going to be a starting pitcher? Well, if he's your eighth pitcher in the last round, you don't have to take him at 160 just because that's where he's in the ranks.
100%.
He is a prospect who this new organization wants as a starting pitcher from all accounts. He had really good numbers once he came back from injury last year. Now you're like, Bernie, you don't know baseball. I researched some people.
Fangraphs.com. You can look it up too. Anybody.
Yeah. But he's a type of guy that I think the historic minds in Roto or the historic minds in even MLB best ball are going to lean away from because he's so uncertain. One of the guys that kind of fits this, that's a hitter for me, is Noelvi Marti.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if I pronounced that wrong.
Marte. Not my strong Noelvi suit. Is right.
Okay. Marte. For the Reds, it's like a similar bet just on an infielder.
Mm-hmm.
Man, he might start out in the minors is what I always hear about him. Cool. When's the money getting paid out in these tournaments?
It's at the end. Not in March.
Yeah. Not which in DL March. Hall probably starting in the majors. So that's not the point I'm trying to make is, but it's these like young prospects that are uncertain circumstances where in the NFL, we are like, oh yeah, we're going to lean into that. We're going to be ahead of market. And then like, there's going to be buzz. And these people are going to rise. I don't see that in MLB too much.
And I think the funny thing to me is I think the people tend to do it a little bit on some of the wrong types of players. So, oh my God, how is he, his name escaping me? The rookie for the Pirates, pitcher from LSU.
Skeenies.
Paul Skeens. So like people are I kind of like Skeenies. That's a good one. But Paul Skeens is like, people are drafting him and it's like, like we got to take a step back. It's very possible he's up and I don't think he's off the board. I'm not trying to say that he's like, you can't select him, but like baseball is a funny thing. The Pirates are going to be bad. Almost certainly going to be bad later in the season. There's this weird push pull in baseball of in the NFL, those young players by week 17, even on bad teams are probably playing more and getting more opportunity. Yeah. That is definitely true. Like at a super high level in baseball, but there's also the caveat of, are the Pirates going to run out the future of their franchise for like a two-start week in, you know, when they are 25 games out of the playoffs at the end of the year? Traditionally, especially with pitchers, maybe with a hitter, they might with a hitter, but with a pitcher, right? There's so much. I mean, these guys get hurt so much. They're managing workloads and, you know, it's like the NBA basically. They're managing workloads of these guys. They don't want them to get hurt. So it's actually more unlikely that that player is meaningful for us in the playoff rounds. Whereas why I love DL Hall as an example is everything that you outlined, but also the Brewers are going to be probably competitive in the NL Central. The NL Central, Jesus Christ, my Cardinals. The NL Central is the NFC South of the of baseball.
That means they're going to all be trying hard at the end, is your point.
Exactly. And so if he's good, so obviously we always have to hit the parlay, like, is he any good? If he's good and the Brewers are competitive, like competitive enough in a bad division, you get down the stretch, you bet your ass they're, if they think he's one of their best pitchers, which he probably is already, he's going to be throwing down the stretch. Mm-hmm. And I get him in the last round and he had a freaking 30%+ strikeout rate in the minors. Like those are the kind of guys that I like. Again, if you are watching this, if you've looked at the Almanac rankings or the Almanac content or whatever, you see all of those guys. Those kind of guys we're just like way out ahead of because that we're bringing this kind of best ball mindset to baseball and then applying it to the specific, you know, chess pieces, which is what a DL Hall is, or Paul Skeens is, of course, a different kind of a chess piece or whatever, right? Everybody has a specific kind of value to them. And then we're taking them and using our best ball brains to apply them to MLB specifically.
Yeah. And a guy that this has kind of already worked out for us on is Wyatt Langford.
Big time.
Crushing spring training. Our ranks were way ahead on him. I haven't looked today or yesterday to see if we're still ahead of him on him or not.
90. I got him at 90. He's rising like
it's,
a mother.
It's so close. I was lining up to take him at 88 yesterday, and somebody beat me to it on DraftKings.
We're going to be behind ADP. We went from like three rounds ahead to we're about to be behind ADP.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
That means we've packed some bags on the guy. We got probably with combinations with other Texas guys. Texas, for a team that's pretty successful, is pretty easy to stack.
Yes.
This Langford's move up is going to make it a bit tougher, but they've been pretty easy to stack just because how they kind of range through the most of the draft. But what's so different about him than some of the other top prospects that might not start right away?
100%. And for anybody that played MLB last year, or even if you didn't, this Wyatt Langford steam. I'm not trying to say Wyatt Langford is this player. Corbin Carroll, who goes in the first round now, this happened. with Corbin Carroll last year. He started cheaper, like Wyatt Langford. All the sharp drafters were like, no, this is one of the best prospects in baseball. He's going to play day one, you know, hit third on the Diamondbacks day one, which is what Langford is probably going to do. And they steamed him way, like, I mean, from round 15 to round six or something like that. Like, it was crazy. And people were just like, this is out of hand. And now look, like, almost no matter what price you took Corbin Carroll at last year, you were happy because you got a first round player at a huge discount. And I think that's one thing that we bring from the NFL perspective as well. It's like, I'm willing to miss on Wyatt Langford. It's okay. Like, if he's not a superstar, that's okay. But there's not that many baseball players, right? Because it is such a data-driven sport. We have so much data on who these guys are as hitters. There's not that many guys that have this mega wide range of outcomes, right? Which is, in baseball, the baseball people, I think, that just come from roto baseball leagues don't necessarily think about it that way. They're thinking about, like, it's a math equation. This guy's going to get me steals. This guy's going to get me home runs. This guy is balanced, right? They're thinking about this little puzzle piece in, I know exactly what every player is. From in baseball, we're thinking about, like, what guy can I get at pick 120 that can be a first round pick next year? You know what I mean? Like, we're thinking about it very differently, and that's such a big edge.
And I think that's even some of the best ball content out there, I don't think is thinking about this. I think they're really still leaning heavily on projections, which I agree, projections are great, but there's these little best ball tricks that you're talking about here. Who's going to rise for next year? Like, a gentleman that I wasn't on last year was James Outman.
Same. Yes. One of the big hits last year.
Outland. You know, I didn't learn. I was really dabbling. I got in a bit later than I did this year, so I didn't have much time. But they're like, top prospect, good offense, going to be competitive, and he can really make spiky weeks. Sign me up. Let me have him on my team. So like, if we can find these players that kind of fit that archetype wherever they are in the draft, I'm also high on Jackson Holliday. There's a little bit of news this week that maybe he might start in the minors, but if I took Gunner or Adley earlier on, he's a great fit with those players on my teams because he has that wider distribution of outcomes that could happen.
Yep. Jackson Holliday can be a first or a second round pick. That's what there's been a lot of fun conversation around Ellie De La Cruz in the Discord where I was going to not
bring him up just for that reason.
I would be disingenuous if I didn't bring him up. I stamped him right as a core pick. What I will say, most of the core pick logic and everything is framed through an underdog and a little bit of a drafter's lens. DraftKings is like the freaking Wild West, man. Like, there's pitchers going in the first round and stuff. So, like, what I will say is, if you're getting into this and you're listening to this, you're probably already out ahead of the general market. Go to DraftKings and draft. And like, you have such a big, I think the pricing is so bad on DraftKings that even like, you don't have to know a lot. And you don't have to use our rankings like totally concrete, you know, it doesn't have to be that straight up. But I think if you just use the logic we're talking about here and you know nothing about baseball, you can go and be like mega plus EV on draft.
Well, that's what I did last year.
It's so bad. Like, you mentioned Outman. Outman goes to like pick 145 or something on DraftKings. It's criminal. Wyatt was going super low on DraftKings. They go in the top 100. On underdog, like their top 100 players, and they go closer to pick 150 on DraftKings. It's like that kind of pricing discrepancy is like anybody can figure that one out. You know what I mean? So the core pick thing is like through the lens of underdog. It's underdog is much sharper. It's much more efficient market. I have Ellie ranked behind ADP on DraftKings because he's like goes in like the early third. He's like in the 20s.
No, he's at ADP 23 now.
I mean, he's rising. Apparently the people read what I said and just said, yeah, I'm taking Ellie no matter what. So I should probably go back and edit that. But Ellie, why am I taking a stand on Ellie on underdog? A, his game fits underdog like really well. Power and speed. Like, power and speed is the game on underdog for hitters. But also, A, the floor of these young guys, it's a little similar to NFL again, where like when you're young, the team kind of like are they going to bench him for a 35-year-old veteran who they know like can't play and isn't part of the future? No, they Ellie is a part of their, like they're planning for 10 years down the road of him being a part of their future. So they got to let him work through these things at the, you know, if he has struggles. So that creates an element of a floor, but then the ceiling is such that when you, in less than 100 games, he stole 35 bases and hit 13 home runs last year. So, and he was bad, like for the sec, like he was real bad down the stretch. So if that's not the floor, right? But like if the floor is so high that like I'm going to get a bunch of steals and I'm going to get some home runs out of a guy going in the fourth round, and the upside is that we're like, okay, do I take him or Freddie Freeman in the first round next year? Like that's the conversation that we're thinking about. And like those are just right, just like Wyatt, those are the guys that I want to target and I'm willing to be wrong about.
Well, and what you're talking about with the floor is when we're willing to be wrong on these guys, it's probably that they weren't that they were like undraftable. It's probably just like, you know, 4 or 5 rounds of whatever. So like when exactly. You're wrong, it's not that big of a deal. But when you're right, like I'm thinking about Ellie, I don't know a whole lot about him, but I think about myself as like a 21, 22-year-old dude. It's can you imagine the pressure that's on this human? Can you imagine having to travel the country every 4 days or on a plane going somewhere else, whatnot? There's just all these life
in a foreign country.
In a foreign country. There's the media scrutinizing you, all these different things where it can be like, this is his second go around. He's probably a lot more comfortable. He's probably figured out life on the road. Who knows what, you know, health and food intake was on the road last year. And, you know, like, there's just so much opportunity for someone to be more comfortable and play better in a situation a second time. So that like the second year, his experience. So like those types of things make me like he faded or played bad the second half of his season last year. What if he was just so emotionally and mentally drained and that really was affecting his play? I just think about this from like a human side too of, he wants to get better. He probably spent all offseason thinking about how bad he played. He's an elite talent that I want to bet on. Those types of people, not necessarily even just Ellie specific.
Yes.
I believe in personal growth and like, why can't he get better? Or if he, I don't know if this is a real stat, but he's probably struck and swung out a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You think he could get better on that? Has no one ever improved on their strikeout rate? Like
Ronald Acuña. We actually had this conversation when we talked about Ellie in the Discord as well. I said, go. Now, I'm not trying to say that Ellie De La Cruz is going to be Ronald Acuña or Aaron Judge or whatever, but go look at what Ronald Acuña did when he first came into the league and what Aaron Judge set the world like. Hey, he came in as a super old rookie and stuff and, you know, hit 50 something home runs and the whole all rise and all that kind of stuff became all famous in baseball. He struck out like 35% of the time or whatever. Right now, he still strikes out a lot. Aaron Judge does. But Ronald Acuña also struck out like a big percentage. Yeah. It's just young players. Dude, imagine going from, you know, minor league baseball or international baseball, coming up to the major leagues and facing the best pitchers on the planet, you know, and your game isn't refined. You're going to strike out a lot. And so it is, of course, a concern, right? When we're weighing all these different things, it is on the negative side, but it's not something that can't be overcome. You know what I mean? It's like a running back in football. You can learn how to pass protect, you know,
it's a great translatable.
You can learn how to pass. It's not a natural thing. And it's very difficult to figure out at the NFL level, certainly as a 21-year-old. You just don't probably have that natural innate ability to pass protect and understand. Right. I'm standing next to Tom Brady. That dude knows he knows what blitz is coming. He knows all that different stuff. I don't know that. At 21 years old as a rookie running back, like he's got to tell me what to do. And I still may screw it up. I kind of think about it that way as a young player in baseball. You're going to be flawed. The guys who aren't flawed like in their rookie year, that's you get, you know, Corbin Carroll and Otani and all that, you know, you get those guys. Mm-hmm. But most guys have some form of a flaw, and strikeouts are one of those because it's really hard to hit a fucking baseball thrown 100 miles an hour at you with movement when you're 20 years old or whatever. And yet we really hold all of our young players to a really high standard in baseball. It's like you did something at the age of 21. You can't possibly, you know, grow from that in the age of 22 or 23 or 24. And I just want to kind of be a little bit the opposite of that, especially when we're talking about fantasy, where it's like, I don't even have to, like, Ellie doesn't have to be a superstar real life baseball player. He just needs to get on base and hit some home runs and steal some bases. Like, he could be above average and be in a first round pick in fantasy drafts. You know, they're different. It's a different game, and I'm trying to win this game. I'm not trying to predict who's going to be a Hall of Famer in okay. Major League Baseball.
And we're trying to get the guy that's going to score the most points in round four, which is different on Underdog and DraftKings. I'm kind of working on something I might publish this week about that. Is so we're looking at probably 11 to 13 games in that final round over the 2 week period is kind of what it works out for most teams. One team I think has 14, but who can get hot and streaky over those 11 to 13 games as a hitter that's going to win you all the money in the round, final round? That should play into our drafting style as well. Of it is a streakier sport. It's not one game like the NFL, but who can just crush 2 weeks on the calendar? And I don't have any data to support that, but I do think about some of these younger, spikier players in that mindset from just an anecdotal basis.
100%. It is taking, I don't know if you can still hear these dogs. Somebody just knocked in. Goddamn Amazon people. But this is my life, like three times a day. I want to translate that transition this into just a final kind of subject here, which is very relatable to that, where it is, you mentioned kind of stacking and stuff. I think that's something that also translates to this, you know, spike upside that you're talking about, but also in a kind of, how do we find some of that from a team perspective and like make it easier on ourselves when we're in a draft? It is, like you said, how does a certain, of course, one player hitting a bunch of home runs is not necessarily going to translate to his teammates having big production over those, you know, 15 games that you, 13 games or whatever that you mentioned. But hitters, within a good lineup, right? So take the Braves, right? Which was the Braves last year won everybody all the money. Marcell Ozuna is a fine hitter. Marcell Ozuna hitting in the Braves lineup is much different than Marcell Ozuna hitting in the Marlins lineup or the Tigers lineup or something like that. There's just, when he does something, there's someone on in front of him, or his team has scored so many runs, they chased the good pitcher out of the game, right? So now you're into bad relievers. If you happen to play in like a park, that's it, right? So you're the Reds, which is a good example of Ellie, awesome park to hit in, or you're in great weather. You get multiple players all benefiting from this environment, right? And I think that is one little lever that we can pull that a lot of people don't necessarily pull in MLB. Like in MLB, you think everybody just says they use the projection or they use their player takes and they just say, who's the best guy available here? And we can say, I took Ellie, so Matt McClain or Noelvi Marte or somebody like that gets a little boost because now I can have multiple Reds. And if the Reds score a bunch of runs in that final, like I'm going to win, or they score a bunch of runs over the course of the whole season, or with the Reds, what I did last year's, I think they're going to steal more than everybody else in like their team strategy is more fantasy friendly. And just like pairing all those guys together is such a big edge, I think, in MLB that most people don't consider.
Do you want me to make your day?
Yes, of course.
All right. DraftKings final round, Atlanta versus Cincinnati. In Cincinnati.
All the Acuna, let's just game stack it up. Give me all the Braves and
Acuna, Cincinnati. Ellie, and then Albies or whatever you pronounce that.
Get Kalenic in there. Get your boy Noelvi. Get Matt McClain. I love Matt McClain. TJ Friedel. Benson. I mean, both of those offenses are like, and the, I mean, I'm not trying to compare the Reds to the Braves. The Braves are unbelievable.
Yeah.
But like you said, from an upside perspective, like, but that's what we're talking about is like get into a game environment in Cincinnati, maybe you get some good weather. It's already a great park to hit home runs in. Right. And like that stuff compounds and that stuff matters. It's not necessarily predictable, but it's kind of like the week 17 thing in NFL where like, I'm not trying to target a specific matchup, but when I've drafted this, you know, I've drafted a Tampa Bay Buck, I can attach another Buck and I can attach another guy on the other side. And if that game happens to be the game environment I love, then I get to benefit from that. It's the same thing in baseball, except probably even more important. I think it's probably even more benefit in baseball.
And I don't think anybody's really dug in that hard on that aspect of it either. So we probably are out ahead of the market. Well, actually, not we probably are. We are out ahead of the market yeah. on that for sure.
All right. So we got to get out of here, but I want to get if you had to do one draft, you could only do one draft from now until first pitch in the baseball season. Is there a stack that you're building? You're probably doing zero pitcher because I know you well enough.
Yeah.
And we talked about that. But like, what's the one like strategic element that you're going to put in that one draft that you're doing?
So between now and opening day, I'm probably going to be drafting on Drafters and DraftKings. I just don't have any other plans to go to draft underdog. So it might be a little bit more tailored there. I think what I would do is I would really mess with the market and I would probably go infield heavy. So maybe three or four infielders in the top five rounds.
Yep.
Mixing in my outfielders. So I'm not like totally missing that elite tier of outfielders or good tier of outfielders, but so really start infield heavy, then outfield heavy, finish my infielders and then go pitcher. So a lot of the markets right now are really, I'm going to get two or three outfielders in the first couple rounds. I'm probably flipping that and just a little bit more on the infielders than coming with the outfielders because there's this opportunity where if I get outfielders that outperform their projection, I match or get close to your outfielders that you're taking earlier, but now my infielders are crushing your infielders and I have a quantity of pitchers to try to get two start weeks in the finals.
God damn it. I'm happy because you're giving advice that I think is just fucking chef's kiss, but I'm also upset because I was literally going to say something that we didn't get to that I wanted to call out was the fact that outfielders are pretty priced up. And I think, there is a tier of outfielder that we can like really take advantage of the market in. We'll talk about that next week. I think, the way the market has priced certain positions in particular is super interesting and something we can take advantage of. I have written a little bit about what Bernie just outlined in the Almanacs. You can check that out in the strategy piece, but that is going to do it for our very first, MLB expert roundtable here within the MLB Baseball Almanac at Spike Week. Hopefully you guys enjoyed. We'll be back next week to do another one. Again, the Almanac is completely free. You're probably aware of that if you're watching this, but be on the lookout for more content. Maybe we'll hop in a draft here or there down the stretch over the course of these next 3 weeks and just be constantly. I got to update the rankings with the Lucas Giolito news. Rankings are there. Everything is there for you to crush your best ball drafts. But for Bernie and myself, we'll see you next time. See you next week. Peace.